It's time for the AL1 Republican Congressional Debate from J.C. Davis Auditorium in Chickasaw. Five candidates that want your vote. Brought to you in part by Mike Ward's Liberty Safes and Cart Doctor. Now, from J.C. Davis Auditorium, here are your moderators, Sean Sullivan and Peter Albrecht.
Municipal Auditorium in Chickasaw for tonight's Republican Congressional Debate. I'm News 5's Peter Albrecht, along with Roseanne Haven and FM Talk 106.5's Sean Sullivan. And we thank you very much for joining us, whether you're here in the audience tonight in Chickasaw, whether you're watching on News 5 or streaming on WKRG.com or listening on FM Talk 106.5. Right now, Sean is going to go over tonight's rules.
All right, so no opening or closing statements, and 1 minute to 30-second answer for each candidate. A 30-second rebuttal will be only allowed and by the sole discretion of the moderators, and only if a candidate is specifically addressed an opponent in their answer. The first question will be answered in alphabetical order by last name. That order will rotate after that for a five-question series. Then the process will be reversed alphabetical as we move through the questions. The questions have been established by WKRG News 5 and FM Talk 106.5 and are not known to the candidates prior to the debate. Questions submitted to Facebook by Facebook viewers may be asked in the final 30 minutes of the debate.
All right, and we have put our candidates on the podium and on your screen tonight, alphabetical order, left to right, and I'll introduce them quickly. From left to right, Jerry Carl, John Castorani, Bill Hightower, Wes Lambert, and Chris Pringle. And we'll ask our audience here tonight in the auditorium for their decorum and no applause, please, as we proceed with the debate. And we're off and running here. Sean, you've got the first question.
All right. And what accomplishments in your political or professional career set you apart from your opponents and demonstrate that you're the best candidate for the job? Jerry Carl.
Thank you. You know, my background being in business, I would say my biggest accomplishment has been economic development and projects that have been brought to Mobile, and also projects that we had here that we actually expanded with. Projects like also shipbuilding, Airbus expansion of the 220. Most people probably don't realize when that 220 hits capacity, we're going to be the fourth largest airplane producer in the world. Amazon at their center out in Theodore, and also the Walmart Distribution Center. That Walmart Distribution Center is 1,000 employees, full-time employees that are great jobs, and that was one of the projects that I really put my heart and soul into. So that's quite an accomplishment. When I took office, the unemployment rate was 13%, a little over 13%, and now it's a little under 3%. So I think I played a little bit of a role in that.
All right, John Castorani.
Yes, thank you. As the only veteran running on the Republican ticket, my best accomplishment, I would say, is as a veteran, being able to work with all races, all religious backgrounds, in order to accomplish one focal mission. If you don't accomplish that mission together and come together and work together, then the worst could happen, including death, to people that you love and people that you care about. Second to that, my time in the intelligence community, I understand technologies that exist, especially as President Trump pushes us to get out of these endless wars that I've served in personally. A lot of those contractors and intel professionals are going to need new jobs. So I would know how to leverage those technologies and hopefully bring some new jobs to the Mobile area, because those jobs can strengthen our borders and strengthen our coasts.
All right.
Thank you.
Bill Hightower.
Thank you, WKRG. Thank you, 106.5. Thank you, the Mobile County Republicans, who have been the leader on this event. It's great to be with you tonight. As a state legislator, I fought for a lot of things for our coast, everything from being pro-life to religious liberties, but also securing the BP funds for our coast and in seeking lower taxes to lower the tax burden on Alabama's coast. It's been my focus, the coast has, because I've represented you here. But before I was a legislator, I worked for large companies around the globe. In that, I learned how businesses operate and what they're looking for. And I want to bring that expertise to recruit more companies to our district. But I also want to take the values as an Alabama State Senator, things you can see on my record. I'm going to take that to Washington, D.C. to represent you well.
Thank you. Wes Lambert.
Yes, sir. Thank you all for having us tonight. My background consists of several businesses we've opened on the Gulf Coast, and I've created more than 500 jobs for our community. And over $10 million I've created through our restaurants, the Dumbwaiter Restaurant, and our relocation business to equal over $1 million in taxes we've paid to the community. So when it comes to creating jobs, I'm pretty good at it. And I've been very successful in one of the hardest industries in the world and never doing it before, being in the restaurant business. So me going to Congress, I feel like business people should be in Congress, being the largest business in the world.
All right, thank you. And Chris Pringle.
Thank you so much, and I appreciate you doing this tonight. As you well know, I was first elected to the Alabama House in 1994. And during my first term, I was elected by my colleagues to be the minority leader of the House. Then I left the legislature and spent 12 years working on my business. I work for Southern Timberlands. I do timberland sales and acquisitions. And I'm a licensed home builder and a licensed general contractor. I understand fundamentally what it takes to sign the front of the checks at the end of the week, because the people that work for me are dependent on those checks that I sign for them. And I understand what it's like to live under all the rules and regulations the government places on small businesses every day. After 12 years of being out of public office, I returned to the Alabama House of Representatives, and I hold the record. I've repealed 350 laws and done away with 77 different state boards, agencies, and commissions. And I currently serve as chairman of the Reapportionment Committee and chairman of the State Government Committee. I have a 100% pro-life voting record, and my pro-life stance, that is not a political stance.
All right, thank you.
All right, thank you, gentlemen. Over the last couple of weeks, we've been asking our News 5 viewers and listeners to 106.5 to send in their questions. We want to know what the audience wants to hear from these candidates tonight, and News 5's Roseanne Haven is standing by now with one of those viewers and listeners.
Yes, Pete, with me now, joining us from our audience is David Preston from Mobile, and you have a question regarding free trade.
Yes, ma'am. Alabama is a net beneficiary of foreign investment and with open trade, as evident within foreign investments like Austal and Airbus here in the 1st District. Airbus recently said that it was hard to invest in Mobile during a trade war. If elected to the 1st Congressional District as a congressman, what would you do to work with the administration and the president to spare companies that have foreign investments in Alabama's economy from trade wars with partners like Europe and Canada, who are our friends?
All right, David, thank you so much for the question. And John Castorani, you answered this one first.
Yeah, David, that's a great question. Thank you for asking that. So first and foremost, I support President Trump and his agenda, but I'm going to have to side with South Alabama, Southwest Alabama. You guys will be the constituents. You guys are the priority. Of course, I would be an advocate, a tireless advocate for South Alabama, realizing that Boeing has grounded the 737 MAX. FAA has restricted that. The A320 is the competitor for the 737 MAX. We need to advocate, hand over fist, advocate and fight to get more sales of the A320 and to make sure that we're not affected by tariffs here, and make sure Airbus isn't affected by tariffs here. And I would be probably your best advocate. I'm a proven fighter as a veteran. But thank you for that. That was a great question, David. Thank you.
Mr. Hightower.
I'm going to protect our industries on the coast here and throughout Alabama. Let's be very clear about that. But it's very important for us to get this China trade deal in place. And I'm going to support President Trump to do it. But what China is doing is they're using our capital markets and our bond markets to fund technologies, to build their military in the South China Sea, to build their rocket capability in North Korea. This is more than just farming issues. And I, by the way, appreciate our patriot farmers who are willing to take it on the chin because they know it's right. I've worked in China. I know how they operate. And I've seen how Trump has masterfully dealt with them. But we need to get that trade deal in place. And we also need to get the NAFTA replacement in place. If we do that, ladies and gentlemen, our economy is going to continue to grow. That's suppressing things right now. But I'm going to support our local industry, just like Richard Shelby did and Bradley Byrne did when they protected Airbus against those tariffs.
Mr. Lambert.
Yes, sir. Great question, David. We all believe in free trade. We all want to protect our industries down here. I think we need to protect our industries not only here, but other aspects of Alabama and the United States. And NAFTA's been sitting with the Democrats for the last 6 weeks, 8 weeks, and is not going anywhere because of the impeachment process. I believe in the free trade. I believe that needs to get done, the North American Free Trade Agreement. And I believe as soon as we get that done, we'll see, in our industry, we'll be able to get, you know, better pricing on products as well coming from Mexico. And you'll see better product, better prices on a lot of other products coming from other parts because they're able to ship it for free. So thank you.
Mr. Pringle.
Thank you. I support President Trump's America First agenda, but we are a port city. A lot of our economy is based on trade, and I support open but fair trade with our trading partners, and right now we don't have that with China. But what's important is to keep in mind our number one responsibility is to protect the workers here in the United States. And that was done during this latest trade war. As you know, also, I mean, Airbus was exempt from the tariffs, protecting the jobs we have here in Alabama. But I think President Trump is on the right track when it's negotiating fair trade agreements that treat us on parity, where China's been ripping us off for years. We need a strong president who will stand up for our rights and our workers.
Mr. Carl.
All right. Well, I have been involved in the Airbus. I was involved in writing a letter to President Trump that got those tariffs held up temporarily. So Airbus is extremely important to this community, as well as so many other companies. But we have to focus on our local farmers. I know that was mentioned. Our farmers are taking it on the chin. They're getting half the price they got for cotton last year because there's just not enough demand. Our steel, the tariffs on our steel have affected us on the port. I sit on the Port Authority. I get to see the numbers coming in and out of the port. So I understand that too. But as America, we have to stand with the president. We have to stand against this unfair balance that we have with China. I think we see that end results about to take place. And what I base that on is the economy and the stock market. The economy's booming, the stock market's booming. The stock market, you follow the stock market, they'll tell you what's happening in negotiations with China, and it's positive.
All right, our next question concerns the I-10 Bayway Bridge Project. How important is it to build a new bridge and expand the Bayway? And what would you do specifically to secure federal funds so that there would be no toll or a minimal toll if the bridge is ever built? And Mr. Hightower, you're first.
I've been very clear. I've been against the toll, but I'm definitely for that bridge. We've got to fix that problem. Everybody knows this, they try to go to the beach and try to come back, and we can. You see, the equation is pretty simple. You either got to lower the cost or raise the availability of financing without a toll. And we can do that. There are plans already being considered, and the engineering companies in our city have done a marvelous job of trying to create alternatives. So what is my role? My role in Washington, D.C. is to make sure that bridge is funded, and funded properly so we don't have a toll. I've got a history of working together with people and bringing people around the table to solve problems in the corporate world, but also in the political world. And I'll do that as we approach this issue that we need to solve for our commerce, for our distribution, our tremendous supply chain along the coast. We've got to solve this problem. And I will do so if I go to Washington, D.C.
Mr. Lambert?
Yes, I believe the first thing you do when you get to D.C. is get with Mitch McConnell and get on the Infrastructure Committee. From there, your first trip, you bring some of your committee members down between June and August and let them look at our bridge. And from that point, they'll understand the necessity it is for us. And you go back to Washington, and then they know the problem we're having. And now we can look at raising money. And from there, we can get that into an infrastructure bill. And the second will be a Go Mesa cap. There's a cap on Go Mesa at $375 million. If we can take that cap off, we'll be able to, hopefully, federal will let us use some of that money to help build our bridge.
Mr. Pringle.
As you well know, I was adamantly opposed to the toll that was proposed because the last proposal was just far too expensive. But we still have an opportunity to build a bridge, and a bridge that we need. There's $127 million still earmarked in the federal budget for that bridge. And the environmental impact, the environmental permits are still intact. And there is a plan being floated around to build a bridge that will greatly reduce cost. We need a federal infrastructure plan. Nancy Pelosi, if you remember, I went to Nancy Pelosi's office to ask her personally why she won't pass President Trump's five-year infrastructure plan, why she's letting it sit on her desk. We need that plan because we need the funds to build a bridge. And as your next congressman, I will work tirelessly to see that we get the funding necessary to build a bridge without tolling our local citizens to build it. It is a federal road, and it should be paid for with federal funds.
Mr. Carl.
I was part of that committee also. I helped pull the project when we found out it was being tolled. We actually pulled it. We were part of the process. We need the bridge. There's no argument about that. There's never been an argument about the need, but the problem has been the tolling. We've got to figure out a way of doing it without tolling. We do have a plan that's going to be launched here in about 2 weeks that I looked at yesterday. It's actually a downsize of the project. We're going to actually look at building a bridge and not the bayway. The bayway will actually be phase two. I'm part of that project too, so I know quite a bit about the bayway, and the toll is not an option.
Mr. Castorani?
Yes, so it's been addressed that it's an infrastructure funding problem. If we continue to allow career politicians who put their own self-interest first and allow them to get into Congress, and I'm hoping that 2020, we saw it in 2016 with President Trump being elected as a political outsider, I'm confident that a younger generation that can work together with individuals can put the people of the federal government first and get an infrastructure bill passed. That's the first issue. The second issue is I signed the American Taxpayer Protection Pledge. I will never vote on anything that raises your taxes, and I stand by that. I made a modest salary. I didn't like paying taxes when I lived in Northern Virginia working for the intelligence community, and I saw the cost of this bridge in over $1 billion. Whatever the number is, it's over $1 billion. And that's unfair for all of the citizens in Baldwin County that commute to Mobile to work and the citizens of Mobile County that commute to Baldwin County to work. And I strongly stand against the toll. This has to come from federal money. You pay your federal taxes already. Thank you.
All right, thank you. And we've heard from all the candidates so far your support for President Trump. But let's flip things around for a second here. What policies or personal traits of the president do you oppose, or under what circumstances would you oppose the president if you were elected? Mr. Lampert?
Of course, that's me first, isn't it?
It is. It is.
So, you know, I think the president's done a great job. And I think he came in the time that we needed him because we were so far left. And we needed someone to bring us back to the right somewhat. And I think he was the right one. I think he's got the business mind that we need up there. You know, policies, stay off Twitter a little bit, maybe. But policies, I agree with a lot that he does because he's a business person. And I voted for President Trump in the primary. And the main reason I did was because he was a business person. And I felt like we needed that aspect or that knowledge at the time where our economy was lacking. And we can prove now that, you know, everything he's set forward to with the economy has proven to work so far. So,
thank you. Mr. Pringle.
I think President Trump is here at the right time. I think we needed somebody to go to Washington and shake things up and change the debate in Washington. And he's a businessman, and he's a New York businessman. And if you push him, he's going to push back harder. And he negotiates like a New York businessman does. You know, the job of the congressman is to represent the people back home. That is our job. We're the person that goes to Washington and advocates for the people back home. And while I support the president, my support will end if he's doing something that I think it doesn't help us in Southwest Alabama. It doesn't represent our values or our needs here in the 1st Congressional District.
Thank you. Mr. Carl.
You know, I agree on the Twitter account. First thing I pose is the Twitter account. I think we would be so much better off if we weren't putting everything out there on social media. But that is the president's style, and it works for President Trump. None of us on this stage will get away with that, I'll assure you that. But, you know, on the positive side, what the president has done is stir the swamp. And that's what he told us he was going to do going in there, and he has done it. And we're seeing the results from that. We see the impeachment that's coming up, and I'm sure that's going to be one of the questions here, so I'm not going to roll into that too much. But the impeachment process, that's all about stirring the swamp up. He is an outsider. He's involved in a mess up there, and we've got to send some people up there to actually support him and give him good advice. Give him honest advice. Don't tell him what he wants to hear. Tell him what he needs to hear behind closed doors, and I'm the man to do that.
Thank you. Mr. Castorani.
So I'm probably the only one that agrees that sometimes I like when he tweets, just to be honest with you. I like a president that says what's on his mind. He's my president, not my preacher, right? I just wish he'd stay off of the classified information sometimes on Twitter, but that's his right being the president. I will disagree with President Trump on one thing. We do need to secure our border. We don't have to build a border wall to do that. If we're pulling out of Afghanistan, we're pulling out of Somalia, there are remote sensing technologies that we can use on the border, right? We will build a border wall in these cities like El Paso, San Diego. You know, we will build border walls there, and we'll also use remote sensing technologies. But you're going to have an influx of contractors and military personnel that really don't have a job without these wars. And they have top secret security clearances, so it's not going to be high crime. And those jobs can be monitored from everywhere. And there is some available sensitive compartmentalized information facility, a SCIF space in Mobile at the Gulf Coast Task Force would be perfect for it. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Hightower.
President Trump has exhibited such strength on things like pro-life, pro-Israel, lower taxes, stronger economy. Now, I as an Alabama state senator, I was voted consistently as the most conservative Alabama state senator, one of the top conservative senators. Those values, they may not be popular, but they work. Conservatism works. And that's what I see President Trump doing. He's implementing these things. What would I work against him for if he took any of these? I can't compromise on pro-life. I cannot compromise on religious liberty. President Trump hadn't either. But if he did, I'd oppose him in his face. There's no problem there. I'm for him because he's getting the results, ladies and gentlemen. Low unemployment, higher GDP. We're winning on the front. There's so many. It's incredible. People have jobs. I want to support a president like that. We hadn't had one like that in a long time.
We'll go on to our next question now and talk about federal spending. Fiscal conservatism is supposed to be a fundamental value of the Republican Party, and yet in the last 3 years, we've been running up some of the largest deficits in the history of the nation. Do you oppose deficit spending, and if so, what would you cut or what taxes would you raise to balance the budget? And Mr. Pringle, you're first.
You know, when Ronald Reagan reduced our taxes, they called it voodoo economics. And when President Kennedy reduced taxes, they called it Camelot. When President Trump reduced taxes, if you reduce the marginal rate of taxation, you stimulate the economy. Jobs are created. People go to work. People go to work, they pay more taxes. That's the way you increase tax revenue to government, by reducing the marginal rate of taxation. Congress has not passed a budget in years. They need to go to work. They need to vote on the 13 appropriation bills that constitute the budget of the United States and quit passing these continuing resolutions that just say we're going to keep spending money until we figure out what to do. In order to instill fiscal responsibility, each member of Congress needs to cast a vote in favor for or against appropriation bills. We need to know where each member stands on every appropriation bills and build a budget and then start looking at those budgets in order to cut.
Mr. Carl.
You know, to understand how to fix it, you got to figure out where we're at. Where we're at right now, we're roughly about $22 trillion in debt. And put that in some type of visual form, you take $22 trillion and you stack them on top of one another, you can circle the earth 58 times. You can go to the moon and back 3.5 times. So that's a lot of dollars. How do you fix it? We have got to sit down with a budget. We have got to start trimming on some of these social programs that we've got. Being involved in local government, I see so much of it. It's so much waste. The federal system throws money out there that should not even be spent on some programs. Some need it. I'm not saying trash them all. There are some that truly benefit communities like this, especially when you start talking about law enforcement. But we've got to start focusing on, we don't have a revenue problem, we have a spending problem. So let's focus on the spending versus the revenue.
Mr. Castorani.
Absolutely. So Congress hasn't passed a budget without a continuing resolution since 1996. That's the year that they put in process this new process of how to pass that budget. The main issue, and I can go for days about both of these issues. You guys can check my website out for more information. The main issue we need to look at are federally backed student loans. That is a huge burden to the taxpayers. I'm never going to raise your taxes, and I don't want you guys to be burdened for that. I think we give that to the free market, and we let banks loan those out like it's supposed to be done, and we don't back that anymore. The second part of that is the Humana TRICARE portion, where we've got veterans coming off of active duty without serving the full 20 years, and they're kind of just left to their own devices when it comes to health care. So maybe we need to look at investing in health care savings accounts for those veterans. Like I said, I can go in for days, but it's all about limiting our spending, and I oppose strongly a deficit. And I think another issue is I don't think any of the congressmen, or very few, have lived paycheck to paycheck or had to do their own budget. You know, they have fiduciaries and CPAs that do it for them, so why would we trust them to budget our country?
Mr. Hightower.
As an Alabama state senator, I fought for accountable government, transparent government, and limited government. We need that, some of that in Washington, D.C. There's definitely things we can do to lower the expense. Smaller government implies less of the cost. Things like looking at eliminating the Export-Import Bank. What about things like what President Trump did is stop aid to the PLO because it was just lining the pockets of the Palestinian Authority with their lavish lifestyle and not helping the real people on the ground. Or things like funding the mating habits of frogs in Peru that cost $400,000. I mean, do you want to go into debt over things like this? I certainly don't. And one of my roles in Washington is going to be to shine the light on that and stop that foolish spending. That would be the first step so we could be responsible with the tax dollars we're sending to Washington, D.C.
Mr. Lambert.
Yes. Comes back to business and being in business. Next week, I'm doing my budget for the following year. It's something when you're in business you have to do every year to make sure that you're able to make money, keep jobs, and keep growth. There's areas of the federal government we can cut. Grants is one of them, just like Mr. Hightower was speaking about. There's so many grants out there that almost anybody can get one. Another area that we need to cut is money we give to other countries. If we can bring that billion, $2 billion, $3 billion back to our country, I think it would make a big difference. And we can take care of our people and make sure we're secure in what we do here and quit taking care of the rest of the world and focus on our own in America. So thank you.
And before we take a short break, let's check in with Roseanne.
That's right. We've been listening to our candidates answer a lot of good questions, but you out there in listening on the radio or television or on Facebook have a chance to ask these candidates questions as well. We encourage you to submit those online on Facebook. At 7 o'clock, we will sign off, but we will continue this debate on FM Talk 106.5 in WKRG.com and Facebook. For now, we are going to take a quick break. When we come back, more local election coverage you can count on.
Welcome back to the AL1 Republican Congressional Debate from J.C. Davis Auditorium in Chickasaw. Your moderators for tonight's forum, Peter Albrecht and Sean Sullivan.
30 seconds.
Yeah, I'm up again, yeah. That's just
I think Chris is coming.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Chickasaw Municipal Auditorium and our Republican District 1 Congressional Debate. I'm Peter Albrecht, along with Sean Sullivan of FM Talk 106.5. And Sean, you have the next question.
All right. President Trump has talked about being open to expanded background checks for firearms purchases. Would you support legislation that required background checks for private gun sales? Chris Pringle.
You know, I have an A-plus rating with the NRA, and I'm a strong advocate for the Second Amendment right to bear arms. And the issue of the Second Amendment, once they start taking away our rights on that, that's always the first right they want to take away when they start moving to socialism is to disarm everybody. Background checks, we already have a background check. And my question would simply be, how do you enforce it? How would you know that I sold that gun to my son or I sold that gun to my cousin? Now, that becomes the issue is the enforcement of it and the random and arbitrary part of that. Because a lot of the guns I have in my gun safe, they came from my father. I had the .22 my father bought when he was 12 years old, to Sears and Roebuck. So I'm very cautious about any bill. We already have a lot of gun regulations, and I think we ought to start enforcing the laws we currently have before we start writing new laws and trying to impose more regulations.
Thank you. Wes Lambert.
Yes, sir. I agree with Chris, but I am open to all background checks. But criminals are going to get guns if they want to get a gun. And we know that, just watching a lot of the school shootings that are happening. But I think the more shootings that happen, the more mass shootings that happen, the more in line that we probably need to get more checks. But I agree we need to enforce it. And the way to do that is, you know, actually start abiding by the law. And from that, you just you know, like we're talking about, you've got your, you buy a gun, you give it to your son, and vice versa. Where does it go from there? So, or where does it get stolen from? So, but no, to answer your question, yes, I'm for background checks.
All right, thank you. Bill Hightower.
I would not support it. I'm a lifetime member of the NRA. The Second Amendment right ensures that every other amendment's in place. And we know what it's like to be responsible gun owners here in Alabama. We don't have New York values, and we don't have California values either. I'm grateful for that. And we are responsible citizens. What this is a cultural issue, what we're seeing in the violence. You've got to attack the core issue, the breakdown of the family. And until we have an open conversation about that, there's no talking about limiting our gun rights. I grew up with a gun in the back window of my truck on my granddad's farm. Felt safe, never thought about using against a person. It was just sportsmanship. I'm going to continue to support our gun rights, and especially the Second Amendment. And I've got a record as one of the most conservative senators in Alabama State Senate doing just that.
Right, thank you. John Castorati.
So as a gun owner, as a veteran, as someone who has bought and sold firearms to private citizens with a bill of sale, I am for a little bit of expanded background checks because I never knew who I was selling it to. And the only thing I'm relying on, if that weapon that I just sold to an individual is used in a crime, I'm relying on the ATF's tracing center up in West Virginia to trace that back to me and then believe me in court that I sold it to the individual with a piece of paper, a bill of sale. It would be very beneficial to everybody if you were able to call in. It would create jobs as well because there's thousands of people that are going to sell guns privately. If you would be able to call in and get a background check for a $25 fee, just add that on to your gun purchase, whether it's a Glock 19 for $400 that you're selling to your best friend, selling to your stepdad, whoever. I think it's beneficial that we have a background check in place so that you know exactly who you're selling that firearm to, and you are accountable for that individual. If you don't like him, don't sell the firearm to him. That we need accountability, and everybody's accountable for one another in America. Thank you.
Thank you. Jerry Carl.
I've been a gun collector my entire life. I was trying to think how far back my first gun. I guess I was probably 6 or 7 years old, and I still got it. And I've collected guns. I'm at the age now I want to pass it on to my children and make sure they get in the right hands. No, I don't want the federal government telling me what I can or can't do with my guns. I think that goes against the Second Amendment. And if we did have a background check, the only people that's going to use that background check are law-abiding citizens like ourselves. The criminals aren't going to go and buy them from a store. They're going to buy them in the streets. And if you check, most of the violence that's being committed by crimes are from stolen guns. They weren't purchased. If they were purchased, they were purchased from the person that stole them. That's why it's so important to secure your gun when it's in your car or when it's on your person. Secure it. Don't let it get stolen. Lock your car. Take it in your house. Take it in your office. But don't leave it for it to be stolen, because that's where we get all these major crimes are from stolen weapons.
Thank you.
Our next topic is abortion. Alabama and several other states recently considered or passed outlawing abortions under any circumstance, including rape or incest. Do you agree with that, or should exceptions be made? And Mr. Lambert, you're first.
I'm pro-life, but I believe three provisions should be made for rape, incest, and the health of the mother.
So. Mr. Hightower?
As an Alabama state senator, I passed things such as a bill making it illegal to sell baby body parts in Alabama. When I saw that Eric Holder wasn't going after Planned Parenthood, I passed a law. So if anybody does it here in Alabama, we're going to lock them up. Similarly, with Doug Jones, when he voted against the pain-capable abortion bill in Washington, D.C., I passed a resolution in the Senate condemning his vote. My wife and I have worked in the pro-life industry ever since we were married, 1980. She used to be a counselor with that Save-A-Life in Mobile. It's a part of our DNA. And as far as this bill is concerned that was passed, I think everyone knows that that bill was passed to challenge the evil Roe versus Wade that just went out of bounds as far as what ought to happen in a situation where unplanned pregnancy occurs. And it's devastating to our community.
Thank you, Mr. Castorani.
Yeah, two parts to mine. The first part, being raised by a single mother. I'm not a woman. I don't have any idea how I would get pregnant. it's a women's health issue. I personally am against abortion. I was raised as a Baptist. But at the end of the day, I'm not going to tell women what they can and can't do with their bodies. I'm a conservative, small government. I do, however, believe that a certain limit should be placed. But I don't want the Supreme Court to legislate from the bench. That's not what they're in place to do. They've never been, that was not what they were created to do. Congress was created for checks and balances, and the Supreme Court was enabled to it was created to rule on cases that multiple appellate courts decided against. So I personally believe I am against abortion personally, but I'm not a woman, and I will never tell a woman what to do with her body. Thank you.
Mr. Carl.
I am against abortion in any form at any time, and it starts at conception. I, too, my wife and I, Tina, we've been married for 38 years, and we have sewn washcloths for these babies in the Save a Life program. So I've been very active, or she has been very active, more so than myself. So abortion is not an issue. I think we need to take it off the table.
Thank you. Mr. Pringle.
I have a 100% pro-life voting record. My pro-life position is not a political position for me. It is a very deeply held religious conviction. I believe life begins at conception, and all life is precious. And this concept that you can take a child at the point of birth and determine that child is not viable and kill it is nothing short of murder to me. I want you to think about this. How long do you think it'll be if you can murder a child at birth, will it be before they get to the end of life and determine that person is no longer viable? We need to pull the plug on him, on that person also. You think about that. The bill that we passed in the Alabama legislature this year, what the liberal media never told you, the lead sponsor and the first four names on that bill were all women. It was signed by a woman. That bill is designed to challenge the Roe versus Wade, because here's the issue. If I'm driving down the road and I hit a little girl going left to right on the street and kill her, and she's pregnant, I get charged with double homicide. 4 hours later, well.
Right, thank you. Let's move on to the environment and the environment here in AL1. Mobile and Baldwin counties know firsthand the environmental and economic impact of a man-made environmental disaster. The Republican playbook calls for rolling back of the EPA and regulation. Do you agree with this? And what is the balance between protecting our beaches, our tourism industry, and promoting our oil and gas industries? Bill Hightower.
This is a states' rights issue, and we know how to manage our snapper population. We do. And we also know how to manage our Five Rivers Delta. I'm not going to give that over to the government to manage. We can do it here. Doing what you had said by giving that power to the state, it is exactly what we need to do. We can manage our own territory. And I'm a strong states' rights advocate because of that, which would create a smaller government and a more limited government. We have excellent capabilities along the coast here to take care of the coast. It's rich in so many ways. We can grow an oyster in a year and a half, and it takes Canada 5 or 4 years to grow the same oyster. We have so many environmental advantages. If we don't take care of our environment, we're not taking care of ourselves.
Thank you. John Castrani.
I agree. It's a state issue. I'm also a little concerned with our current state issue that if you look at the coal ash that Alabama Power's got in the Delta, a lot of hunting camps are up there. A lot of good game to hunt is up there. I don't trust the politicians in Alabama right now in Montgomery to not be bankrolled by Alabama Power. So I'm calling on all of you to call them up and ensure that they are not being bankrolled by Alabama Power to let this go by the wayside. South Alabama has one of the most diverse aquatic ecosystems on the planet outside of the Amazon, right? That's huge. So why are we going to allow big corporations to bankroll our politicians into allowing them to pollute our waters, into allowing them to pollute our hunting camps? We should not allow it. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Jerry Carl.
You know, we're not back in the 60s when we would just dump poisons into the river system and into the bay. We've come so far since then. But I deal with the EPA. I deal with all the federal agencies every day as County Commissioner in Mobile. And it is a nightmare to keep all of that separated. Getting the federal government involved in environmental issues has served a purpose. It truly has. But I can't support expanding EPA and the existence. We've got social media. You have seen from the coal ash facility. We've got ways of getting messages out now that we could not do in the 60s and 70s. And we, the people, have gotten much, much smarter, especially dealing with environmental issues from social media. That's one of the positive things that we've actually got. But expanding the EPA and the federal involvement in South Alabama, I have no interest in doing that whatsoever. Leave the Delta alone.
All right, thank you. Chris Pringle.
Would you repeat the question, please?
Sure. So Mobile and Baldwin counties know firsthand the environmental and economic impact of a man-made environmental disaster. The Republican playbook calls for a rolling back of the EPA and regulation. Do you agree? And what is the balance between protecting our beaches and tourism industry and promoting our oil and gas industries?
The EPA, and this is the problem with all government regulations, they just constantly add more regulation and more regulation and more regulation in order to justify their existence. And oftentimes you find these regulations don't actually serve the purpose of protecting the environment. They contradict each other. And what I'd like to see is us look at all the regulations and make them reasonable and make sure they focus on protecting the environment, not just creating more bureaucratic red tape for everybody to go through. We live in the most beautiful part of the world. We have the most beautiful river delta system in the world. And that bay is, you know, we laugh, and once you come here and stick your foot in the bay, you're hooked forever. And I agree that we need to do everything there is to protect our natural resources. That's what brings the tourists to Mobile. That's what brings the tourists to our Gulf beaches. We saw the disaster when the oil spill occurred, and we need to do everything to make sure our natural resources are protected.
All right, thank you. Wes Lampert.
Yes, sir. The more we take away from the government, the better we are. In any aspect or anything that we do, if the government's involved, the worse it's going to be on us. I think with the coast, we need to have Mobile Baykeeper more involved. We need to have Coastal 150 more involved. We need to have our communities more involved, and we need to have the state more involved, because we're the ones that live here. They're the ones that come down, and they measure crazy, like for snapper. You know, they measure off of Sandy Bottom. I mean, we know there's plenty of snapper out there. But the more we keep the government out, the better we are. And I think we need to bring it all back to the communities that thrive down here and depend on our bay and our shores every day.
Right. Thank you.
Let's talk some foreign policy, and specifically the removal of our troops from Syria. Do you approve of the president's decision to do that? Do you approve the way it was handled, which critics say abandoned our allies, the Kurds, and immediately played into the hands of Russia and its allies, Assad-backed Syria and Turkey? And Mr. Castorani, you're first on this one.
So I've said from the get-go, from the onset, I do not agree with pulling out those troops in northeastern Syria. And that's for two reasons. One, those 26 troops that we pulled out of northeastern Syria were all soft guys, special operations forces. They were trained, advised, and assisting the Kurdish forces. We are going to allow for now the third genocide since the early 1990s, under the first President Bush, of these Kurdish people. I served alongside a Kurdish refugee from the second genocide that they went through. These soft guys, less than 1% of our country serves in the military. Another less than half a percentage point serves in special operations. These guys have doubly volunteered to serve in special operations. And I've talked to a few of them that are my friends that now work at the agency, and they are against it because they're going to get bored at home. They signed up to go over there and perform this foreign internal defense mission, which we call FID. And we're leaving. The Kurdish weren't only our allies against ISIS and the 10,000, 11,000, whatever number you hear, ISIS detainees. They also are our biggest ally against the Iranians. They're right there. It's a terrible decision. Thank you.
Mr. Carl.
I sent a son into active combat into Afghanistan. I wouldn't wish those 8 months on anybody. That was the longest 8 months of my life. And any troops we can pull out of combat, I'm for pulling them out. With the technology we got, we can certainly manage that. If we're going to spend all of our resources overseas defending other countries, let's pull them out. Let's bring them back home. Let's protect our own borders. We can use those same troops down protecting the border. I know there's some laws that may play an effect there, but we can protect our borders with our troops. It's not a matter of them getting bored. We've got a job for them, but I will not support sending without exhausting every avenue another soldier or Marine They don't like to be called soldiers. Another Marine into active combat without exhausting it.
Mr. Pringle.
You know, President Trump promised during his campaign that he was going to get us out of some of these endless wars. So what he did was keep a campaign promise. I believe you should never turn your back on your allies. You should always support those who support you and fulfill your commitments and your promises. But the reality is, I'm not in Congress right now. I don't have a security clearance. I've never been to the security briefings to really understand what's going on and what's happening over there. The only thing I read is what I see in the paper or learn on television, which is not necessarily the truth. So as far as I'm concerned, unless I had a security briefing and knew the whole picture of what was going on, it's hard for me to make the judgment, except I respect the president for keeping a campaign promise and attempting to end an endless war.
Mr. Lambert.
Yes, I agree with what our president did. The Kurds, they've been fighting for hundreds of years. And who says they're going to quit now? They're going to keep fighting. And do we keep sending men over there to fight these wars and to get killed? I don't think so. I think you pull our troops home. I think you protect our borders. I think you bring your troops home to be with their families. And to quit spending money overseas where we don't need to spend it. And bring it back here. And just help with the issues we have here on a daily basis. From border security to school safety and so forth.
Mr. Hightower?
I support President Trump's decision about withdrawing the troops because I think we're spread way too thin around the world. We had a policy a long time ago. We would only go in if we could win. And that's what we need to do here. And bringing these troops back will protect our young men and women in the services. You know, I do believe Congress needs to authorize war. I think it has to go through that process that we have in place. The thing that strikes me is that in this process, countless people, innocent people, are going to be hurt. Many of them Christian. Many of them minority groups that this region suppresses. That's a tremendous concern of mine. But if we go in for war, we better win that war. We're not a maintenance organization. Our military is strong. It's going to go in. It's going to dominate. It's going to do its job, and it's going to come home. That wasn't happening. And so I understand his logic for bringing them home.
All right. Thank you. Hearing from constituents unhappy about federal limits of red snapper on season, and a number is becoming part of the job as the AL1 rep. How do you propose shifting management of red snapper and other reef fish away from National Marine Fisheries and to full state control? Jerry Carl.
I think it needs to be state controlled. Pulling nets over sandy bottoms and doing a fish count does not make sense. You can't pull a net over. Well, through the University of South Alabama, we have technology here. We can actually go down and get a good count of fish on reefs, and we've got an idea. Federal government, they don't do that, nor do they have the resources to do that. But we, the state, do. We know what's best for our waters, not the federal government. Less government, less federal government. Let's get it back in the hands of the state.
Thank you. Chris Pringle.
You know, I'm very fortunate that I serve on the Gulf States Marine Fisheries Council. And I'm an absolute firm believer that we can do a better job of regulating the marine fisheries in the Gulf of Mexico than the bean counters in Washington can. As you've heard, they were looking in the wrong place for red snapper. You can't find red snapper where they don't exist. But it's not just the red snapper. I think the research done here at the Dauphin Island Sea Lab and all along the Gulf Coast gives us a better perspective of what the fish stock in the Gulf of Mexico is and what we can do. And I think the states along the Gulf Coast should be able to regulate the catch and the seasons here locally.
All right, thank you. Wes Lambert.
Yeah. Just like I said before, the more we can take the government out of our lives, the better we are. Just like we had said before as well, where they measured red snapper on a sandy bottom. I mean, fish are like us. They like structure. We live in structure. They live in structure. So that's why we have reefs for the fish to live in. If they were to measure the fish correctly, then I'm sure we'd be catching more allotments. I believe everything needs to come back to a state or a local control when it depends on livelihood of our industry, our snapper industry, our oyster industry. because a lot of that affects us in the restaurant business too. So I see that on a daily basis. And there's so many times that we can't get fish because the federal government stepped in and not let us do it. So.
All right, thank you. Bill Hightower.
You've got to start working with people. Congressman Bradley Byrne, when he was elected in that special election, he hit the ground running. He really made a difference as far as how our snapper population was treated and got us some additional rights. First of all, I'd work on the calculation. They're using a science that's just wrong. When I talk to the reef makers, when I talk to the Dauphin Island Sea Lab, they know what's going on. And the federal government is just ignoring that science. That would be one. If that doesn't work, I want that right to come back to us. But the calculations are not accurate. And if you go out fishing and enjoy our beautiful coast and fish those red snapper, you know what I'm talking about.
All right, thank you. John Castorati.
I agree, it's a state issue. I don't know much about red snapper other than I enjoy fishing it and I enjoy eating it. I'm not a scientist, not a marine biologist. I would defer to them, but it's definitely a state issue that we can handle inside of the state of Alabama, as long as it's not 12 miles off the coast and it's an international waters incident, and we don't govern that body of water. But yeah, I'd have to agree, it's definitely a state issue. But to be honest with you, I haven't had the time or money to go out there and go take advantage of this extended season. I did back when it was like 3 to 10 days or whatever it was. But I'm not well-versed enough to speak about red snapper other than they're delicious. And, you know, once you catch one, you just keep catching them. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. As we approach the top of the hour, we're going to do a shorter question here. So just 30 seconds for your answer on this question. And it concerns our Senate race in Alabama. Which Republican do you endorse in the Senate race in Alabama and why? And Mr. Carl, you're first.
It's very simple. I endorse Jerry Carl for Congress. That is not my race. I'm not getting in that race. I think it's very unfair for any of us to get involved in that race.
All right. Mr. Castorani?
I'm going to second that. But I will tell you, I stand firmly against Roy Moore. I think what he did was atrocious. And there have been allegations in the legal community spanning back to the 1980s. Just please don't vote for Roy Moore. So I guess my endorsement is for everybody but Roy Moore. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Hightower.
We've got to defeat Doug Jones. Somebody needs to show that man the door. He said he was going to reflect our values. He does not reflect our values. That's job number one. So whoever we elect, they've got to be able to beat him. We've got a cadre of great candidates. And I'm going to support the Republican nomination, whoever that might be.
All right, Mr. Lambert?
I tell you, it's going to be a fun race to watch for sure. Probably more fun than this one's going to be. But I agree that we have to have our best chance, our best person go forward to beat Doug Jones. And I'm not going to endorse anybody, but I just think we have to have the best one forward so that we do take the Senate seat back.
All right, and Mr. Pringle?
Well, I agree that the most important issue is to get rid of Doug Jones. He does not represent the state of Alabama. He represents a left wing of the Democratic Party. I know every one of those candidates for Senate on a first-name basis. They are all personal friends
of
mine.
Sean Sullivan from Mike Ford's.
I respect each and every one of them. So I'm not going to choose sides, but I will vote for the Republican nominee, period.
Okay, we're going to do another quickie here. How about 20 seconds for each of these answers? What's the best thing about living in Lower Alabama? Mr. Castorani, you're first.
Hands down, it's got to be, I can only pick one.
And you only have 20 seconds.
I would say it's got to be the beaches. It's got to be, I know they say the Emerald Coast is in Destin, but, you know, some parts of the year, if you go to Pirate's Cove and stuff, you'll see some Emerald Coast out there and the intercoastal waterway. So I'd say it's probably the beaches in Baldwin County.
Mr. Hightower?
I've lived in a lot of other places. I grew up here, went to E.R. Dixon, Sidney Phillips, Murphy High, and then I worked for large corporations around the world and came back to be a small businessman here in Alabama. I came back out of a choice. This is where I wanted to raise my kids. It has a value system like none other, and I love it because of the community here.
Mr. Lambert.
There's two cities in the United States that build planes and build ships, Mobile, Alabama, and Seattle, Washington. That makes it really cool to live here. We have seafood farmers, we have agricultural farmers. I mean, we've got everything in between, and that's why we live here, and that's why we want to raise our family here.
Mr. Pringle.
It's the diversity. It's the diversity of our agricultural or pining woods,
our beachfront, our food. You know, we were founded by the French and the Spanish, so we have a great variety of food. And it's just the way of life we enjoy, of having to be able to fish and hunt and recreate on our waters.
Mr. Carl?
Without a doubt, it's the best place in the world to raise a family. You know who your neighbors are. You got the values of a family here, and without a doubt, it's all family.
Thank you very much. Roseanne, what's ahead?
All right. A lot of good questions and interesting answers, kind of getting a good feel of the personalities and the stances of these candidates. We are going to continue this debate online on WKRG.com, on Facebook, and FM Talk 106.5. We're going to wrap up the television coverage in just a few minutes, but keep those questions coming online. In the next half hour or so, we are going to continue firing your questions to these candidates. Back to Peter and Sean now.
All right. Thanks for watching on TV, and we'll see you in a few minutes online and on radio.
Thank you, because there it goes. All right. Wow, that was weird. All right, welcome back. And our continuing coverage of the AL1 Congressional Debate for the Republicans here live from the J.C. Davis Auditorium in Chickasaw. And it's been pretty full hour so far, and we have a half hour or more for questions. And let's get right to it.
Okay, we're going to talk about health care now. And Republicans promised to repeal Obamacare, and they controlled all three branches of government, yet appeared, according to some, not to have an acceptable replacement. What are your thoughts about the current state of health care in this country, and what can be done to improve it? And Mr. Hightower, you are answering first on this one.
Sure. Obamacare, it's been unfortunate Obamacare wasn't overturned. That was a big disappointment of mine as well. Look, socialized medicine doesn't work. We know socialism doesn't work. We've seen it. History's proved it. So why do we want to go down that road again? But the Republicans have put together a plan, and I scanned it before I came, but I haven't actually studied it. In Forbes magazine, I believe it was, says that this plan actually is a good plan. I will review that, and I'll make a decision on that. But we have to ensure that our healthcare system is not socialized, because we don't want that in the States. We don't do things like that here in the United States. And, you know, whenever I was in the Alabama State Senate, this was always a temptation to have another government program to implement and do something that way. I fought against that because I believed in limited government. And expanding our Obamacare will do just that, create a bigger government.
Mr. Lambert?
Insurance companies have too much control. State of Alabama, we have Blue Cross Blue Shield, so they're pretty much a monopoly. I think we need to be able to go across state lines. We can go across state lines for all other insurance purposes except health. If you want to go to Florida, you can pay cash, you can pay a lot less amount. For instance, a sonogram over here, if your copay $700, you have to pay $700. You can go to get a sonogram in Pensacola and pay $100 in cash. That's not fair. The other, and one of our bigger platforms is children's cancer, which we didn't talk much about. Children along the Gulf Coast are dying all the time from cancer. And I held a young lady when I was dating her for 3 years. She passed away from cancer, and I was holding her hand. One of our best friends lost their child last November from childhood cancer. We have $200 million that's funded to children's cancer by the federal government. We have $541 million for Planned Parenthood. That tells you the problem right there with our government and our healthcare system.
Mr. Pringle?
I think healthcare is probably the biggest issue facing this country right now. Obamacare has done nothing. It needs to be repealed. I witnessed firsthand when my father was in a nursing home and the stress it put on my mother and my family, and the economic uncertainty she faced with providing the care that my father needed at that point in time. About a year and a half ago, I was diagnosed with cancer. And that's a long ride home when the doctor tells you need to go get your affairs in order. I was coming down the highway trying to figure out, how am I going to pay for this surgery? How am I going to pay for my recovery? The economic uncertainty I faced at that moment was almost overwhelming. I'm very fortunate. I've lost my left kidney, but I'm cancer-free. I'm like Sonny Callahan. I only have one kidney. But that's the issue for me, is the economic uncertainty all families face with trying to provide health care for their loved ones. I believe firmly that socialism is wrong and a market-based solution is the way to go.
Mr. Carl.
I've spent the last 30 years. I've opened seven different home health care equipment companies, probably 25 to 30 different locations. I've opened three pharmacies. I still presently own a pharmacy. It costs too much. There's too much bureaucracy. We have a mountain of bureaucracy when you talk about health care, and it really limits competition. It limits it. For a person to get started now in the health care business, just jumping through the loopholes, just a startup home health care equipment company. We started with a truck and a rental bed. Now you're looking at $60,000 to $70,000 just to be accredited, and most people can't do that. So, we need to focus on some of the rules and regulations, and it's okay to make a profit. It's okay. We want the smartest minds. I want the smartest mind to be my doctor. And if we take the profits out, you're going to see those smart minds go do something else.
Mr. Castorani.
I'm for repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act. I would say that one thing the Affordable Care Act did do is it prevented insurance companies from not insuring your children that were born with pre-existing conditions. Right, that is extremely important to me, that we maintain that they cannot deny you coverage due to a pre-existing condition, which in some insurance plans that cancer is that pre-existing condition because maybe you use tobacco, maybe you drank a little too much, right? And I don't think that should be the case. I will also tell you that I had to resign my job at an Intel agency to come and run for office. I lost my health coverage effective October 31st. For me to go out onto the Affordable Care Act exchange, for just me, I have no kids, I have no spouse, it was $1,600 a month with a $12,000 deductible. But when I resigned my job, you know who didn't drop me? State Farm. So let's talk about how we can make that portable and it's not tied to an employer. Because many people might not know, your employer is also paying heavy premiums, and some of these small business owners up here can attest to that.
Okay, thank you very much. And a lot of our viewers and listeners here tonight have been concerned about health care. That's been one of the top things they've been messaging Roseanne Haven about. And Roseanne, you have a question that I think is a good follow-up question here.
Yeah, a lot of concern about health care, and frankly, several people saying they feel like they're just hearing a lot of lip service. That's their comment, not mine, but they want to know specifically, seriously, one person even said they have a child who is on a feeding tube and bound to a wheelchair and not getting a lot of help, but what they want to know is hardworking people, do you believe members of Congress should get health care for life?
Wes Lambert, you're first on this one.
No, I don't believe that at all. We've all signed the term limit pledge to go up there, spend our 6 years, come back, go back to work. You know, I give our employees health care. It's very expensive, but I don't believe anybody in Congress is above the law. I think that they should always have to come back and be a citizen and be one of us. And to me, that's not fair.
Mr. Pringle?
And I'm a small business owner. I'm self-employed. I'm self-insured. I have to provide my own health insurance. You know, our founding fathers created this beautiful republic in which we live. And the concept was you would walk away from your career, your farm, your job. You would go to Washington. You would serve a period of time. And then you would return back to your original profession. And that's exactly what I plan on doing, serving a period of time and coming home. So, no, I don't think members of Congress should be entitled to lifetime health care insurance.
Mr. Carl?
You know, when I got elected county commissioner, I chose not to take a paycheck for 2 years, and I diverted that money into some sidewalks at a school, which I'm very proud of. But I've never taken health care. I've always paid for my own health care. My health care is paid through our family business, and it will continue to be paid for through our family business. I don't think that Congressman, to answer your question, should have health care for life. No. When the job's over with, come home and get back into a normal life.
Mr. Castorani.
No, under no circumstances should any congressional member have health care for life. I elected to not be covered right now while I'm running this campaign. That's good because I'm young, I'm healthy, and I'm not injury prone. Knock on wood. I'm not going to knock on it because you said not to. But so I don't believe that they should, but it hits me hard when I see that politicians, because they get health care for life and they're not involved in the Affordable Care Act, like they don't have to go out there and into the exchange, They don't have to, you know, fight tooth and nail to make sure that their children are, they don't have any pre-existing conditions, so their children are going to get covered. It's a tragedy to me that as Republicans we can so vehemently deny abortions because it's murder and it's wrong when we cannot get our health care in order. What are we doing to these children? We're killing these children. We're allowing them to suffer. So you can't tell me you're a Christian and you're against abortion and then you're also against that. That's wrong. And I'll never, ever accept the health care from Congress. Thank you.
Mr. Hightower.
Under Obamacare, I saw my insurance rocket three times higher than it was. The cost is unbelievable. I frankly, maybe everybody else knew, I don't know that you get insurance for life. I never knew that, never even contemplated it. If I have insurance, I'm going to pay for it if that term ends with Congress. But I know there are needs, and my heart goes out to the story, because when you have someone in that condition, you're praying for them daily, you're trying to get the community around them to help, you need help. And we have good medical care along the coast here with an excellent facility to try to help people, and we should.
Right, thank you. Let's go to international affairs here and President Trump's diplomacy. Do you approve of President Trump's relationship with what are three accused murderers, Vladimir Putin, Kim Jong-un, and the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, while at the same time distancing himself to some degree from longtime U.S. allies in Germany, France, and England? First up, let's go to Chris Pringle.
Well, first, the President of the United States is elected, and he has to represent us with the other leaders of the world. And those gentlemen are the leaders of the world. That's who they lead the country. We have no choice in who the president gets to deal with. But I think it's very important that we always stand with our allies. The people who support us, we need to support. But we've got some allies that really haven't been supporting us very well, and we need to have a conversation with them about being there for us the way we've been for them time and time again. But again, whoever the other countries have as their leaders, who the president has to deal with, and that doesn't matter who the president of the United States is.
Thank you. Jerry Carl.
You know, some of our friends are very well purchased through NATO, and they're, because of our expenditure through NATO, they are our friends. I don't have the knowledge that President Trump has of the situations of the three that you're actually talking about. So I have to trust him as our president to know more than I know, and he's making the right choice. I can't judge him on that. I can't do it.
All right, thank you. John Castrani.
So I'll break it down because you mentioned three individuals. So let's start with Vladimir Putin. So I support President Trump's position on that is a near peer adversary, and you kind of have to, you know, give him a hug every once in a while and kind of let him know that we're not, you know, always fighting against them, right? And then we'll talk about MBS, right, the Crown Prince in Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia has a Houthi problem to their south in Yemen. And these Houthis are not just shooting at them. They're shooting Scud missiles, right, chemical weapons into Riyadh, which is like thousands of miles. Everybody saw the rocket attack that, you know, the Houthis claimed. But, you know, we're saying that the Iranians did it. President Trump gets a daily briefing called the PDB, the President's Daily Brief. President Trump is well-versed in everything that's going on. So in relation to MBS, we have a relationship in Yemen, our U.S. forces do, with the Saudis and with the Emiratis. And I'll answer the North Korea one very quickly. As in the intelligence community, I did not think when President Trump first came to office that he would ever get on good terms with Kim Jong-un. And I've been amazed by that.
All right. Thank you. Bill Hightower.
I expect him to have a relationship with these people. He's got to be able to talk to them. I would do the same thing, wouldn't you? Have an open dialogue. That doesn't mean you agree with everything they do. The one thing we've seen about Trump is he stands his ground. That's really important when you're dealing with people like Putin, like Saudi Arabia, or China, which I referred before, who is robbing America blind. Yes, I expect him to have an open dialogue and communication, but I also think it's the liberal media focusing on these personalities to make our president look even worse. He has relationships with leaders all around the world. These are just a few. And I would expect that of any president.
All right, thank you. Wes Lambert.
Trump is a businessman. And in business, you have to be able to get along with everybody. And what my mother always told me, and probably y'all heard the same thing, was you keep your friends close and your enemies closer. That way, he kind of knows what's going on back and forth. But You know, none of us have the intel to know why Trump chose those three. But he knows why. He has an agenda, and he's following it. And he's done a great job. And if the Democrats would leave him alone and let him finish out his presidency in another 4 years, he'd, you know, do a lot more for us.
Thank you. Okay, let's talk about term limits. I heard somebody mention that everyone's taken a term limit pledge. Is that, we just have a nodding of heads. Is that accurate that everyone has taken the term limit pledge? Okay, let's talk about why that's so important to the democracy, in your belief, not to have people up there 10, 20, 30 years. And we'll begin with Mr. Pringle.
You know, when our founding fathers created this republic, they created it on the basis of like I said earlier, people leaving their farms or leaving their homes and going to Washington and serving for a period of time and then going back home. That's the reason why the U.S. House of Representatives only is a two-year term. They wanted a flow of people coming and going in that chamber to bring fresh, you know, new blood into the chamber constantly. And that's what they were after. They were not trying to have a professional political class. They were trying to have citizen legislators that came in and represented us. And that's the reason why I think we've all signed this pledge. We all intend to go. I know I intend to go. I intend to serve, and I intend to come back home and go back into real estate and construction.
Mr. Lambert?
Yes. The house was built for the working man, the working lady. And our whole goal is to go up there, take new ideas. The term limit we signed was 6 years. I think that gives you enough time to take some ideas, to get on some committees, and hopefully make a difference here. But, you know, having families, you don't want to live in D.C. You want to come back here. You want to get involved with the community and do what's best for our community here, from here, with boots on the ground here.
Mr. Hightower?
I've committed to vote for term limits if this comes up as a bill in Washington, D.C. I won't term limit myself for this reason. I'll disadvantage you. You won't be able to get proper representation because we know tenure is a very important thing. But I signed a term limits pledge, yes, but I've also brought legislation to the Alabama State Senate. Voted consistently as one of the top conservative senators, I brought a bill to the floor, and it didn't pass. The Republicans didn't pass. Why did I do that? I did it because change wasn't occurring. We weren't dealing with fundamental problems. And it was the long-term legislators who resist the change. There's some great ideas we can implement in Alabama, but I want to take that to Washington, D.C. That same concept of term limits to work hard for you.
John Castorani.
The pledge you're referencing is the termlimits.org pledge. And like Bill just mentioned, it's only a pledge that you pledge to introduce legislation to introduce term limits, right? It doesn't pledge that you're only going to serve three terms and then get out. I know Bill's answer now, but I'm going to go ahead and call all of you out, so nobody's had a rebuttal yet. So I'm going to pledge three terms and done, and then I'm going to take myself back to the agency and continue serving this country that I love so greatly. I'll still have a clearance by then. I'll still be able to go back to work. We've had six representatives in the past century. That is outrageous to me. Congress is not a nursing home. It is not a retirement community. It's not where you go and you spend 30 years. Adam Schiff, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, over 100 years. And I'm still waiting for somebody to point to one thing that they've done, individually or collectively, that's been great for this country. I can't name it. So I will only serve three terms and I'm done, and I yield to the gentleman.
Mr. Carl?
I have term limited myself. I'm the only one on the stage that can actually say that, because should I lose this, I'm out of office anyway. So I have term limited myself, and I understand the value of that. I never got in politics to retire in politics. I never got in politics to better myself or my family. I'm here for the community. And you the people are the real term limit. When you vote, you can get them out just like you can put them in. And those that aren't actively involved in politics, that is the true term limit right there.
All right. Roseanne, you've been monitoring social media and hearing what people have to say tonight. What do you have?
Yes, thank you, Peter. A big one that several people have commented on, and that is illegal immigration. Hearing frustration from folks who say they have actually lost their jobs to people who come in, specifically beach workers in Orange Beach and Gulf Shores, whether they're here on student visas or whatever. and they're taking their jobs away from them. One man says he's 57 years old and lost his job to, he claims, to an illegal immigrant. What would you do about illegal immigration?
Mr. Lambert, you're first on this one.
You know, in the restaurant business, people have asked me many times to go to the beach to open a restaurant, and I won't do it because of the labor issues. I think the illegal immigration, you know, I'm for the wall. I'm for building the wall. And when you build the wall, you're going to have to build up your Coast Guard, too, because they're going to find the least resistance path to come in. I'm for legal immigration, and a lot of people that have come to this country legally are wonderful people. But for the illegal immigration, we've got to stop them in their tracks. And we've got to keep them where they're coming from and keep them on the other side of the wall.
Okay, Mr. Hightower, you're next.
President Trump has done a great job putting a focus on what the real issues are. Yes, we need the wall, and I'm going to support him in that. But there's so much more we can do, from technology, stopping anchor babies, stop the support of amnesty, ending the chain migration, reforming birthright citizenship, and stopping the lottery that allows people to come in. Here's the tone through all of those initiatives. I want merit-based immigration, like Canada has. I don't want people just to come in. But we've got to control our borders. There's drugs, there's crime, there is disease coming across our border as a result of us not having a strong border on the Mexican, at Mexico.
All right, Mr. Castorani.
A little confused by the question, because you mentioned visas and an individual lost his job from someone that had a visa. That's not illegal immigration, guys. Sorry. That's legal immigration. And a majority of the illegal immigrants that overstay or that come here, they overstay their visas. They came legally, but our immigration costs too much. They have to hire attorneys because no one understands that jargon. Try reading it sometime. Right? But I am for ending chain migration. I'm for ending the anchor babies. And I say chain migration because an individual from Yemen can then vouch for and sponsor his third, fourth, fifth cousin, right? And maybe he hasn't seen him in 2 decades. Has he been practicing jihad? What has he been doing? That's why, and they call it a Muslim ban. It wasn't a Muslim ban. It was Donald Trump, President Trump, putting those countries on notice that you better be enrolled in our biometrics so that we can track down these individuals that are being sponsored to come here for visas. But I would say they're not flooding over the wall. Yeah, we had a caravan once or twice, but it's not just hopping over the border and coming in here. It's these migrants that overstay their visas. Thank you.
Mr. Carl.
Yes. You know, when you start talking about immigration issues and the illegal immigrants that come over here, we're bypassing the real problems. And dealing with county government and local government, I deal with it every day. You start talking about the drugs, and the drugs are a problem. Mobile is at I-65, I-10. We're a major corridor. You saw where yesterday they busted 100 pounds of cocaine over in Baldwin County. That didn't happen by accident. That passes through here every day that way. And just for the record, on Tuesday and Wednesday, it's going east. On Thursdays and Fridays, cash is going west. And that's the way the drug market works. Very simple. It's a business. It's an enterprise. It's all coming in illegal, though. It's coming across the border. We've got to focus more on border security. Now, these jobs that we're talking about, most of them are seasonal. We've got to make it easier for our farm community and some of these businesses to be able to easier to hire legally, bring them in, and get them back out.
Mr. Pringle.
We are a nation of immigrants, and I support legal immigration. That's how we all got here. It is imperative, though, that we secure our border, our southern border. Everybody knows the problems going on, the people crossing the border illegally, the drugs that are coming through are ravaging our country, the fentanyl, everything that's coming through. You know, a while back, I saw a bumper sticker that said, heaven has a wall and a gate and strict immigration requirements. Hell has open borders. And that's what we need to stop. We need to stop our open borders. We need to know who's coming into this country, where they're coming from, and where they're going. And we need to enforce the existing laws that we have on the books right now and enforce our visa laws. I think it's disgusting. Right now, we treat illegal immigrants better than we do our veterans. Illegal immigrants are given better benefits and access to more government services than the people who stood for this country and fought for us.
All right, thank you. International?
Yeah.
International here, and we talked about a little bit here. It was in some of the responses to earlier questions, but let's talk about Iran. at what your concerns are about Iran, if any, and under what circumstances would you favor military action in the region? Bill Hightower.
Iran's a threat to our freedom. We do not want them to have the bomb. And it's not only a threat to our freedom, but it's a threat to Israel. You know, if Israel lays down its guns tomorrow, they'll be pushed into the sea. If all the countries around Israel lay down their guns tomorrow, there's going to be peace. This is a situation where a radical Islamic group is infiltrating a country, and they're brutalizing their people, women and children. It's a difficult regime. They cannot win. And I don't know the type of military action we ought to take against them. Sometimes I wonder if we've not gotten the reins on Israel, and if we just let them go, they could take care of it. But I don't think that that necessarily is a solution. But we do have to stop them from using and having that capability, because they've stated very clear they want to destroy.
All right, thank you. John Castorani.
I'm against, I'm strongly against any sort of military intervention. I think what President Trump is doing is choking them financially. If you look at that, they depend on their oil exports. We're doing a really good job of ensuring that they don't make any money off that. And I think it was some data put out by their national bank that said if they don't get back to resuming at least half of their production and exportation, that they're going to go under, right? And the people are getting angry. I mean, if you guys can Google it at home, the rich kids of Iran, they love to travel. They love, you know, Western things. They've just got this regime that's been in place since the 70s that's pretty awful. But I will warn any individual on this stage that is elected into Congress. I will warn you, before going to war with Iran, you need to think and consider what Iran has. Iran has the Quds forces. Iran has Hezbollah. And you want to talk about a problem on your southern border? There are towns in Central America where the Quds forces are paying individuals to come to the United States with a visa just to see if they can exploit it, and they can. Mm-hmm. We would be at war with international professional jihad, and we cannot do that.
Thank you. Jerry Carl.
I think we keep the economic pressure on Iran. I think that's the best play at this time. And I'm curious, why don't we not have the other countries over there stepping up wanting to defend themselves? Because Iran's a threat to everyone in that area, not just Israel. They're a threat to everyone. So why aren't the other nations involved in this? Why aren't they taking care of their own business? Why don't we, America, have to go over there and clean up everybody's mess? I'm not for it, and I don't agree with it.
All right. Thank you. Chris Pringle.
They play such a major role in the destabilization of the Middle East. I think the greatest mistake we made was when President Obama allowed them to enrich uranium, which put them on the path to nuclear power, and the billions of dollars we returned to them. We should have kept the economic sanctions against them. We need to keep those economic sanctions against them. To go to war with Iran would be like going to war with Iraq. What do you do when you win it? How do you handle the problem? I don't see a solution. We should not fight battles unless there's a clear path to victory and a clear solution. They have made it clear that they want to annihilate Israel. That is their goal. They want to destroy that country. As Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East. Israel is our greatest ally in the Middle East, and we need to protect and defend Israel at all costs. But like I said, I don't want to see us to go to war. I'd rather see us use other alternatives such as economic sanctions, and I'm sure that our government has ways of messing with them that they don't want to talk about. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Wes Lambert.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. The economic sanctions on Iran, I think we need to keep tightening and tightening until they can't really breathe anymore. And once they do that, you know, if they're building nuclear weapons, I think someone needs to go in and denuclearize them. But I don't agree in war. War, as we know, with veterans here, and Jerry's got a son in there, that, you know, we don't want any more senseless deaths. And I think if we can do it by sanctions, I think that's the way to go.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to wrap up with a couple of shorter questions. Again, 30 seconds for this one. On climate change, do you believe in global warming? Why or why not? And Mr. Castorani, you're first on this one.
Like we talked about Red Snapper, I'm not a scientist, but scientists do say that they tend to agree that global warming does exist. Whether we're the cause of it or the expediter of it has remained to be seen. But I do believe in protecting our environment. I believe that it's a state issue. and that the federal government shouldn't have a part in it.
Okay. Mr. Carl.
You know, history has recorded climate change. It's a swing. It's a pendulum. And I think Al Gore has made quite a living off the climate change issue. So I don't buy into that climate change myth, as I like to refer to it as.
All right. Mr. Pringle.
I think everybody knows the climate has always changed. It's warmed and it's cooled over eons of time. Currently, we have scientific evidence that says the climate is warming, and I read a report just the other day that said the climate is cooling. But I believe we need to do everything we can to protect our Earth, but we can't do it alone. We have to do it in conjunction with all the other countries in the world, and the problem I have with those other agreements, they exempted China and India and the other third world countries. They only relied on us.
Mr. Lambert?
A week and a half ago, it was 26 degrees. So the coldest we've ever been in November for the first of the month. No, I don't believe in climate change. I believe you have bigger hurricanes, but I think that's a rarity. Michael, a rarity. But the climate change issue, I mean, when we're 26 degrees the first of November, no, I don't believe in that at all.
All right, and Mr. Hightower.
Policies and decisions so broad as that have to be made on good science. My dad was a scientist and a medical doctor here along the coast. The thing is it changing? Yes, I think our climate is changing. The issue is whether or not what percentage we are contributing to that. But what's happening is it's a tyranny. They want to change our lives. They're going to use that as a club to change the way we live. I'm not for that at all.
All righty, and Roseanne has our final question of the night.
Okay, here's something fun. I want you guys to tell me something personal about yourself, something that people probably don't know about you, but maybe they should.
Jerry Carl, you are first.
I have two first names, and I actually have a middle name, so I have three first names, Jerry Lee Carl. I don't know where to go past that.
That's it, huh?
That's it. That's all as good right. as it gets.
All right, then, Mr. Castorani, you're up.
Yeah, so shout out to Bang Energy Drink. I think they're fueling my campaign. I guess that's one interesting fact. I didn't realize how hard a campaign would be. It's tough work in a 7,000-square-mile district. So I'm looking forward to meeting all you guys. You'll see me. I'm probably drenched in sweat, wearing running shoes, going door to door, drinking Bang Energy Drink. Shout out to Bang. Sponsor me.
We'll move along here with Mr. Hightower.
Well, I play trumpet. I went to Murphy High School, and I played with such greats as Diana Krall and Tony Bennett. A lot of people don't know that. I do it every night almost. I put that CD in my CD player, and I play right along with them. It's not maybe not too beautiful, but I have a whole lot of fun.
All right, Mr. Lambert.
I have coached travel softball for girls for 12 years. Now, that's difficult. But over the last 2 years, my child just signed with the University of Mobile. I've had 12 girls sign college scholarships and realize their dream to play ball.
Very good. And Mr. Pringle.
Well, you know, my name is Chris Pringle. And no, I was not named after my favorite uncle, Chris Kringle. But it's an amazing thing how well I sing in the when I'm on my tractor out in the woods bush hogging. For some reason, when I turn the engine off, I don't sound quite as good.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your answers. And well, for people watching online, we are putting up the dates of the coming up elections. It is March 3rd is that all-important primary here in the state of Alabama. And later that month, if required in this race, there would be a runoff, of course, with the general election taking place November 3rd. Sean?
Yeah, I just want to say thank you to the five candidates assembled here tonight for coming out. Also, the Mobile County Republican Party for making this possible. And all of y'all that came out tonight in person, all the people watching and listening tonight, a big thank you. And thanks for doing this with me.
All right. Again, thanks, everyone.
Thank
Have
you.
A pleasant evening.
Good night.
Good night.
All right, man.
That was good. That was fun.